And I think we may have our first guest on the line. Do we have...
We do indeed have our first guest.
Okay, I thought it should be about time for that.
This is Robert Alanese, and he's our filmmaker.
All right.
And if I remember right, he made the movie Dinks, which I loved. Hi, Robert. Welcome to the Flyover Zone.
Hi. How are you guys doing?
Fine.
Well, we're doing fine today. We're happy to have you with us today.
Yes.
Oh, well, I'm glad to be here.
Well, you don't say.
Oh, that's the ugly.
I've been getting that a lot lately.
I bet you have.
Sam thought he was the first.
No, I wasn't going to be the first. You can't have a time like that and be the first.
That's one of those things that you get a nickel for each one of the times people say that, you can make your next film.
Right. And that is the name of your newest film, right? You Don't Say?
That's right. Yeah, it's called You Don't Say. For many reasons. The title's actually a play on several things, which is why I went with the title. Of course, the obvious is that it's an old saying, you know, oh, you don't say, you don't say. But it's also the theme of the film, which is that people don't say what they feel, what they normally feel, or what they would normally say under certain circumstances because of being politically correct.
Right.
So you don't say means also that people just don't talk like they used to. They don't say what they feel like they used to.
Well, you know, it's true. I mean, that the first element of a good film is it true, and it is. That's interesting. That what I'm interested in, how did you take this concept, which is an obvious truth in the modern world, and make it a film?
Well, it was a lot of it had to do with the success of Dinks, Double Income, No Kids. Of course, I've won a couple awards with that film. It was my first comedy. And, you know, my other films, my earlier films were dramas. And so I'm really kind of a drama-based writer. And I was always told that comedy was the hardest thing to write. And I guess it kind of scared me because I never thought of myself as a funny person. I decided, well, I'm going to give it a shot. And I wrote Dinks, which is basically a story about a couple who don't want children and don't have children, who move into this community or this town, which is filled with family values and things of that nature. And I looked for the ironies and the comedy within the discrimination that the two main characters had to go through when they had to deal with parents. And it went over really well. People saw the irony, and I was able to draw a lot of humor from that.
Well, there's a whole audience of people who live that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And they, except for Bill Maher, they're ignored by almost everybody.
Right, yeah.
So that was I was quite entertained by that film and refreshed by it.
I was, too. I thought it was excellent.
Yeah, not everybody out there wants to have four children.
Right. And I think, you know, it was it struck a chord, I think, with a lot of people who watched it because they felt it was almost a voice speaking on behalf of the people who don't have children and are afraid to, you know, come right out and say, look, I don't like kids.
Right.
I don't want them.
Exactly.
You know, I want vacations. I want a life. I don't want to have to sacrifice everything for a child, you know, because I have things that I want to do. And it's okay for that, you know. And there's just so many people that believe that, you know, if you don't have children, there's something wrong with you and you're selfish and you're greedy and all this stuff. And personally, I think they're just jealous.
I agree.
They got stuff with them. We don't have to worry about it. So they got to complain to us.
We get to go to Paris in the fall. You know.
There you go. That had a lot to do with You Don't Say, because in the same respect, because that kind of comedy went over so well, I wanted to write another script that also had to do with an audience not being able or an audience being able to identify with characters who were frustrated and finally got a chance to really say what they think, kind of like the character of Richard Brooks in Dinks, who finally speaks out on behalf of people without children. And so when You Don't Say, it's kind of the same kind of premise. We have it's different in the regards that it's about a woman in corporate America who does everything by the book. She's politically correct to a fault. And basically, she's going out with this older man, and who she wants to marry, but he doesn't want to marry her, probably because he's afraid of the age difference or whatever. And he's always trying to encourage her to speak her mind and to be more honest, because the political correctness of her corporate life is kind of pouring over into her personal life. So they go into this shop one day, and it's one of those kind of goofy shops where there's all these crazy things like, you know, pet rocks and all those kind of things. And up on the wall, there's these necklaces, a bunch of necklaces on the wall. And each necklace has a card attached to it, and supposedly when you wear each necklace, it does certain things. Like there's an anti-constipation necklace, and there's a necklace that will guarantee an erection as long as you wear it, and goofy stuff like that. So he comes upon one that's called the Speaking Stone, and when you wear it, it's supposedly something the Mayan Indians, the stone that the Mayan Indians used to wear during tribal meetings so that everybody was honest with each other. So, her boyfriend sees this necklace, and he buys it for as a joke, and she decides to wear it because she's one of those costume jewelry nuts. It's a very beautiful necklace, and all hell breaks loose.
Oh, what a lovely.
Yeah.
It just almost grows naturally out of the other film.
It does. I mean, I find the unique thing about it is I found that people love to watch movies where the characters do things they can't do. And I think that's why superhero movies are so big, and movies like the Rocky movies, and movies with characters that the audiences can identify with, and they want desperately for that character to succeed because they have something in common. And I think the things that happens to Bobby, the main character in You Don't Say, she confronts that woman on the cell phone waiting in line at Starbucks that's talking about her sex life out loud, right, while everybody's waiting for their coffee. You know, people see this every day, and they would just love to be able to go up and say, look, I don't want to hear what you're talking about. Keep your mouth shut or whatever.
Right.
So the themes carry over very well. And I think we had an advanced screening of the film a few weeks ago, and the audiences loved it.
Well, and you know, it's what's interesting is this is a tried and true thing. One of the hallmarks that the Chaplin used to say about his films is, I always cast my main character as an underdog. I cast my character as the person outside of authority.
Mm-hmm.
Because most people will identify with that.
Oh, yeah.
And they want to see the cops, fall in the river. And they want to see, that stuffy old banker get a pie in the face. They want to see that stuff. And they can't do it. So in a sense,
right,
you're in a modern way, you're doing what he did in the early 30s by sticking his, thumbing his nose at authority then.
Mm-hmm.
And
absolutely.
And it's true. I mean, how can you have something called managed freedom? I mean, you hear politicians talk about stuff like this all the time, and you have to conclude eventually that they're just crazy. You can't have something called managed freedom. You can have freedom, or you can have a managed life, but you can't have both. And I'm looking...
And, I'm sorry.
No, I'm just really looking forward to this film. I'm looking forward to seeing this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
premiere, didn't you?
Actually, the premiere is a week from today.
I knew it was real close.
It's coming up. It's at the... as a matter of fact, I am standing in the patio theater right now as we speak in Chicago, where the premiere is taking place 1 week from today.
Hmm. Now, are you working on another a project in that theater, or is this just for the film? Or
no, this is for the premiere.
Okay.
We're basically here today to do some audio checks, picture checks, and we're meeting with some of the cast members, crew members, who are going to be at the red carpet event, and basically just show them the theater and let them get familiar with it. Because this is a beautiful theater. This is a historic theater. I'm not sure when it was built, but as I stand here right now, I'm looking around, and there's over 1,000 feet in front of me.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
And the screen, I guess you would call the screen an ultra screen.
Really?
Because it's huge, it's just humongous. But this is the way movies were played back in the days when I was a kid.
Sure.
These big, giant, grandioso theaters like this—they just don't. They tore a lot of them down, and And, you know, there are, fortunately, there are still some people, you know, in the neighborhood who were willing to help the owner of this theater come up with money to preserve it and open it up again. And now they show everything here. Last week, I think Lincoln was here. You know, so, you know, it's very nice. You can actually go to a theater, a 1,000-seat theater, look at a giant screen and have a beautiful surrounding and watch the latest film. Great idea.
And it helps you become absorbed into the film itself. The bigger, you know, bigger these people are, the more you, you know, suspend your critical eye and your belief, and you just get into the film.
And it adds to the experience, I think, too, because we're so used now to going to theaters, and they're just like a, box.
It's like a big TV screen, you know.
Basically.
It's like leaving home to go to the theater to watch TV.
As TVs get larger and screens get smaller.
Well, some TV screens are as big as the things you see in, like, a multiplex.
I know.
And we're getting a lot of commercials now, too, so it does feel like a television show.
Yeah. So tell us, now, where is this patio theater, P-A-T-I-O, I'm assuming?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Where is that located?
Well, it's kind of northwest of the city. It's on Irving Park Road and Austin Avenue. It's right on the corner, and it's, I would say, about maybe less than 5 minutes, 10 minutes north of the downtown area, depending on traffic, of course.
Right.
But it's between, like, Harlem Avenue and Cicero, for those Chicago people who know those streets.
All right. Well, I know some of those streets. Now... What are you doing for distribution? How's this going to go out to the world?
Boy, distribution, the evasive thing every independent filmmaker is searching for.
Yeah, the 6,000 pound dead squid in the room.
Yeah, I'm still looking for it. I mean, you know, we're still looking. I mean, I think every independent filmmaker wants distribution. But it's just not that easy to come by, because there's so many independent films out there. As far as You Don't Say goes, you know, we're having our Chicago premiere next week. It's going to be back at the Marcus Theaters in Orland Park on May 5th for a whole day's run, five shows. And we're going to try to keep it in theaters or in front of audiences as long as we possibly can to get as much exposure as possible so that, you know, the word can get out. And then, of course, the next route is film festivals and, you know, direct contact with online distributors by, you know, sending them screeners, things like that. It's a crazy route, but it's the only one we have.
It's like, you know, it's like a rat's maze, but sadly you have to run it to keep the film above water.
And to get it known. I mean, I was really happy that Dinks did as well as it did. I mean, we're not talking nationwide here, but it was successful with audiences. And, you know, I just think if it was given the right opportunity by a distributor to put it in front of audiences, I think it would be very successful. But, you know, you have to convince somebody of that, and it's not easy to do.
Well,
that's one of the reasons why in You Don't Say, we hired Larry Thomas, who plays the soup Nazi on Seinfeld,
right. Mm-hmm.
Because we wanted a bargaining tool. Something that, you know, a distributor would go, well, you know, this guy, Robert Alanis, is unknown, but the soup Nazi, you know, and that little bit is sometimes all you need to get the attention you need from a distributor.
Well, and it's so frustrating when you see the amount of money that goes into a rollout from Hollywood for a bad film.
Oh,
I mean, even a film that they know is a stinker. And they'll roll out
John Carter, maybe.
Yeah, they'll roll out, you know, $50 million in promo for this thing. And,
you know, they could have just given me $1 million of that, and I would have been happy.
Right, and you would have had a successful film.
Oh yeah, without a doubt.
It's just I'm always amazed. I lived there for a while, and the amount of money that goes out of that place for nothing, and yet for people who are making, you know, earnest films, real films about real things, they can't get a dollar. They can't get 50 cents for that.
Now, there are distribution people. We ran into some in Atlanta, Georgia at Dragon Con last year.
Oh, that's right.
We went to their, you know, their event.
Seminar.
Their seminar.
On
and they were handing out information. Very approachable. They look at your film and they may take it on for distribution. And they work, I guess, only with independent, smaller filmmakers. Well,
I don't know. There's no way they can work with anybody else. I mean,
I don't know if you've tried anything like that or, you know, are familiar.
Well,
with
we have a, I have a representative, sort of an agent, who I hooked up with a year ago when we finished Inks, and I learned a lot about distribution through this guy, and he's been, you know, great trying to get us exposure, or get me exposure as a director, writer, and some of my other films as well. And he's introduced me to several different distribution companies who are just starting because they're trying to get movies for, you know, streaming or for on-demand, which is really the future of film nowadays, because it's getting harder and harder to get people into movie theaters. And, you know, the day very well may come when a movie will come out and you'll just be able to watch it on TV.
Well, you know, and the cost is, if think about this. I mean, if you have a film and you had a budget of $500,000 for publicity, and you spent that publicity on in cyberspace, you'd probably end up driving a lot of people to your film because it's so much it's so easy for people. They turn that box on every day anyway.
Right.
And I agree with you. The future of independent film, certainly, and I think most film, is, like every other form of entertainment, is going to be on that box.
Yes.
I think it's really obvious that that's the way it's going.
Yeah.
You know, Ebert Fest is coming up this next month in Champaign, and he does several panels during that week of movies, and they always have a panel on distribution. It's just the other thing you have to do. It's the hard part of making a movie, I think.
Well, the worst part of making a movie is getting it out there.
Making
the film is not nearly as hard as getting people to see it.
Mm-hmm. Well, another thing too is, you know, a lot of filmmakers are not business people. They're not, you know, they're filmmakers. They're artists. That's why, you know, a lot of filmmakers or actors have agents, because they themselves, you know, they're the talent. They're the ones that make the things, and they know how to make them, and they know how to give it their best and improve on their craft and things like that. But when it comes to the business side, it's hard because they don't know what to do. They don't have the connection.
Well, that's
one of the hardest things about being a filmmaker, I think, is if you don't have a good business sense and you don't know how to market what you've done, you know, your stuff's bound not to go anywhere.
Well, you hit exactly on the point, because most of people like myself or who create things, we have a really good network with people who create things.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if I'm going to do a film, I can go find 100 actors tomorrow. I know where they are. Or if I'm working on an art project, I know what to do. But if you're not a businessman, then you don't have the businessman connections that businessmen have.
Right.
And you're not likely to be able to amass enough of those to do you any good. That's why you need somebody who's already a businessman.
Right.
Because they will have those connections. And a lot of times, artists try to make those connections themselves, and when they do, they don't know what to do with them.
That's exactly true.
Because
I see it all the time, especially with actors. You know, actors, you know, they're great at their craft, and they know, like I said, they know what to do and how to improve on their craft and that type of thing. But when it comes to marketing, they just don't know what they're doing.
Right. Yeah,
right. I think most people, and they're really those two branches of it. They're the people who make things for someone to sell and people who can sell them.
Right.
And it usually doesn't work very well for one person to try to do all of that.
No, I don't think so. And it's one of the hardest things that I have to deal with. I mean, fortunately, I've been self-employed my whole life, and I've had two businesses. So I know about marketing. I know about promotion. I know about, you know, being able to talk to people to get things that you need to accomplish your goals, you know, as a filmmaker or just as a businessman.
Right.
But it's really hard when you're not familiar with all of the avenues. And have all the proper connections. But time is going by. I'm learning, getting better at that, and I'm making connections. I'm just hoping that people, you know, like the people at the Route 66 Film Festival and the Illinois International, who gave us the awards for Dink, and, you know, who knows for You Don't Say what will happen. I'm just hoping that these, you know, these will give us a bit of credibility, or give me a bit of credibility, so I can, you know, move on to bigger and better things, and maybe even get bigger budgets and make better films.
Well, yeah, and speaking of the Route 66 Film Festival, they are taking films now.
Yes, I know, and I'm had to wait until I got an absolute final cut of You Don't Say before I enter it, but it is one of the things I'm planning on doing.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing it. I think you actually have, you're talking right now to three judges.
Right.
For the
Route 66. Right. Yes. Did I ever tell you how much I love you three people?
Yes, I was hoping you would say that.
Yeah. Have you become a fan of us on Facebook?
I listen to your show every Saturday. Is there any way I can get an autographed picture of the three of you?
Oh, yes. Well, we can arrange that. We're actually filling out the scorecards for your film right now.
Let me just be a true Hollywood producer and say, you can always show me love by sending me lots of expensive chocolate.
There you go. Hey, you'd mentioned your about acting just a few minutes ago, and I was wondering if you might want to mention some of the actors that are in your film this time.
Sure. Well, of course, Larry Thomas, the Soup Nazi, has a small role, but it's an important one. He's in the movie for about 10 minutes, but those 10 minutes count. The leading actress is a Chicago actor by the name of Julia Cheerson, and she is incredibly talented. It's her first film, and the audiences were just blown away by her. I'm blown away by her. I can't believe how great a performance she did as the, you know, as Bobby, the character who wears the necklace.
Mm-hmm.
Gary Gao is an actor from Orland Park who I have worked with for 10 years. He was in my very first film, Time Server, and he's been in every movie since. In some fashion, some whether it's a supporting role or lead. I have a talented young actress, Dani Wilkin, from Chicago, who is also in the film. She plays Teresa, the office slut.
Oh, and, yes.
Yeah, be sure then, you bring her when you come to the Route 66 Film Festival.
I'll have her dressed in character just for you.
All right. Yeah. Thank you very much.
And then there's, Brandon Glatz plays the brown-nosing executive. And then, of course, the big
is the gentleman still on?
Honcho.
Oh, yes.
Sorry?
Our other... co-host just joined us here in the studio.
Yes.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
Brian
yes.
Wood.
That's all right.
Good morning, sir. I apologize for interrupting. I heard most of your interview, and I have to know who you are and what other films you've done.
Well,
Robert
I'm...
Robert Alanese.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I've done approximately 6 feature films. First one was called Time Server, which was a science fiction movie. Barrymore's Dream, which won Best Feature, by the way, at the Route 66 Film Festival in 2007.
Mm-hmm.
Then I did a movie called Bitter Blue, which was a family film. I did a sequel to Barrymore's Dream called The Vision. Dink, Double Income, No Kids, came after that, and now You Don't Say.
Fantastic.
And we will certainly be looking forward to seeing the latest one. And... if you're able to get down for the festival, of course, we'll be happy to see you as well.
Yeah, I'd be looking forward to it. I had a great time the last time I was there, and of course, it helped that the Dink's won best comedy film.
when you become really, really, really famous, and you're like hanging out with Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt, bring your friends to the Route 66 Film Festival. Don't forget us.
I'll do what I can, but there's no guarantees on.
Well, Dinx is the only one I've seen so far. I'm interested to see these others. I thought it was very, very good.
I would quite like to see Dinx.
All of the movies are, if you don't mind a shameless plug here, all of my films are available at the Soul Productions website,
mm-hmm.
which is SOLE-productions.net.
Uh-huh.
And if you go there, you can purchase. All of the films are available there, except with the exception of You Don't Think.
Fantastic.
Yeah, it sounds like a. Well, it sounds like one. I'm certainly looking forward to it, and I know that you probably have to go do theater stuff. That's why we sort of had you on at an odd hour today, but
yeah, kind of early.
Right.
And
you have 2 minutes to tell us how was Larry Thomas to work with.
Larry, you know, it's funny because you're talking about a character who is when you see him in Seinfeld, he scares the hell out of you.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's true.
You know, I was nervous when I first met him because I didn't know how he was as a person. I didn't know if that was, you know, the no soup for you. I didn't know if that was how he was, you know, or if he was something else. And the funny little story I could tell you is I had to pick him up at the airport for his shoot last summer, and I was late. So uh-oh. I'm driving in traffic going, oh, my God, I'm late to pick up the soup Nazi. He's going to kill me.
Right. No soup for you.
You know, and I pulled up at O'Hare, and he was sitting there with his bag, you know, like tapping his foot. I'm like, oh, no. Oh, what a way to start things off. And I opened the door for him, and I said, hi, Larry, I'm Robert. I'm so sorry I'm late. He goes, oh, that's okay. Kind of cool. I like hanging out at the airport.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow, yeah, that's weird.
He is cool. We did have him on the show, and he was just the nicest fellow.
Yeah.
And he even told us a story. He was a little hungover, and I was kind of worried. And of course, in California, so it was 2 hours earlier. He'd been out the night before, but at the table was someone who was on the phone with a friend, and she was so anxious about, you know, talking to the soup Nazi. And he told us a story about how he got on the phone with this friend of a friend and just gave her the thrill of her life. So, you know, he just sounded like the nicest guy.
And do you realize he's famous for approximately 10 minutes worth of work?
I know it. And
in one episode.
And he got a Grammy, was it a Grammy nomination or an Emmy nomination out of it as well.
Mm-hmm. And I met him one time at a convention and then at the after party, but I don't think I'm surprised I remember anybody from that party, and I'm sure he doesn't remember. But yeah, we met for a while there at a party afterwards. And
no booze for you.
But he was a great guy, and he was always willing to talk about his craft, and that's really important for people.
And as an actor too, he's very professional. And when you see him and You Don't Say, he plays the CEO of a company from Mexico City that Bobby's company is merging with. And I wanted an actor that was intimidating. So when the soup Nazi idea was presented to me, and I hadn't seen that episode of Seinfeld, so I looked it up on YouTube. When I saw him, I thought, wow, this guy's scary. You know, when I first talked with him on the phone, I said, you know, I sent him, you know, his portion of the script and the synopsis, and I asked him, I said, can you do an Hispanic accent? Because you're from Mexico, and he sure enough did it right on the phone. Hmm. And I said, great, you know, this is great. So when we flew him in and he got on set, he was completely professional. He doesn't have a lot of lines in the movie, but he's got such a strong presence on screen that he doesn't really have to say anything. You know, he just looks, and you can just imagine what he's thinking and how he feels, and he just has a great way of conveying that, and I think that's what made him so successful as the soup Nazi.
Yeah.
Well, he owns the place.
Hours and hours of practice in front of a mirror. I don't want to spoil it for anybody.
And that's true, and we do have a musical question. It's not very long. I know you have to go, Robert, but just listen and answer this question.
Okay.
Here's the challenge. Two action figures in a fight to the death. Which side will you be on?
Mr. Bacon and Miss Seal Tofu are having a cook-off, and the judge is you. Got to have a winner, so tell me true. Is it Mr. Bacon or Miss Seal Tofu?
Okay, bacon or tofu?
Tofu.
All right.
You've been paid off.
Yeah.
All right.
Hold on, I'm scratching you don't say off my list here.
No. You know what? I'm sorry. There's something wrong with the phone. Did you say bacon?
No. Actually, you've got two people who like tofu here.
Two
only
judges
one.
Like tofu.
One likes bacon.
One doesn't.
So.
Oh, okay. Well, then I'll stick with tofu then.
Yeah.
Excellent. We have action figures for both of those, so.
Wow.
And as you might imagine, poor tofu is the underdog.
Doesn't usually win, but we're happy once a day.
Thanks,
and you know what? Before I go, if you guys don't mind, I also want to mention that You Don't Say has a great song in it by Alan O'Day, who's from Los Angeles. And you might remember Alan O'Day, who had the number one hit with Undercover Angel.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
From the 70s. And he mm-hmm. also wrote Angie Baby for Helen Reddy, mm-hmm. Rock and Roll Heaven for the Righteous Brothers. And he wrote the theme song for You Don't Say, and it is incredible. And he's such a wonderful guy, and I just wanted to give Alan a plug because he, out of all the people I've worked with, like Larry Thomas, you know, here I'm talking that I've worked with a songwriter who is, you know, just as famous, if not more so, mm-hmm. in his field. And Alan O'Day is just an incredible, incredible guy and did a great job with the song You Don't Say. Just wanted to plug that.
Excellent.
Well, and if there's any way that we can end up playing the song on the show, we'd be happy to do it.
Or getting him on our show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Let's just keep in touch and let's see if we can make that happen.
We can
okay.
do that.
Good.
Premiere next Saturday at the Patio Theater in Chicago,
and Larry will be here.
Oh, excellent.
Excellent. Everybody go.
Yep, that is great.
Yep. And see a good independent film.
Soul-Productions.net. And you
right.
can get there from flyoverzone.com. All right.
That's
well,
great.
Well, thanks a lot for being with us. And go break two legs.
Go have fun now.
Just not your own.
All right.
Yeah. Well, thank you guys very much. I appreciate it. It was great talking with you.
Uh-huh. Great to talk with you, Robert.
Thanks, Robert.
Adios.
Okay. Bye-bye. All right. Bye-bye.
Yes.
Robert Alaniz, a fine filmmaker.